We want the truth, so watch Truth Wanted live Fridays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/yttw and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/calltw.
Wait, hold, sorry, everybody. I saw Kenneth and Mike, and I got confused and thought this was Talk Heathen. Hey, Jason, let's roll the right intro this time, please.
Yeah, gotcha.
Damn it, Greg.
Thanks to
Amateur hour.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Talk Heathen takeover of the Atheist Experience. It was a hostile takeover, all right? And I'm just going to let you know right up front, we've got Matt at a secure second location right now. And if you want to see him back in the future, you're going to need to go subscribe to Talk Heathen. Okay, we're just going to call it what it is. All right, and while you're at it, go subscribe to Truth Wanted, go subscribe to the nonprofits and secular sexuality, and we might give you your precious Matt Dillahunty back, all right?
It's definitely not because I overslept or anything like that, and that we just have to do it now. It's definitely not those reasons at all. So don't think that by any means.
Okay, look. In all seriousness, Matt's fine. As far as we know, but he's feeling a little under the weather. So we're filling in, recovering today. We're looking forward to having Matt back here in the future. But still, like, go subscribe to the other shows, you maniacs. With that in mind, with me today, J Mike. I want to call myself like K Enneth.
Well, yeah, we had that whole. Yeah. Fiasco last week. So I think like the first live comment I saw was, "Ooh, Jay Kenneth and Jay Mike."
Because right.
Yeah, if you tuned into last week on Talk Heathen, we kind of like morphed in the son and the father, so to speak.
The two headed monster of that's yeah. Right. Yeah, that was fun seeing people talk about how like there's just different versions of like the Jay Mike like Trinity or whatever.
I got a kick out of it. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Well, look. Okay. All joking aside, we got some calls to get to. J Mike, are you ready to take some calls?
I'm ready. Hopping into calls right away awesome. Is always glorious.
Well, let's head north first. We've got Leopold up in Canada, who apparently wants to talk about hypocrisy and anti-Christian sentiment from within the atheist community. Leopold, what can I do for you?
Hi, nice to talk to you, Kenneth, I believe.
Yeah.
Hi, J Mike. I had a question. So, I mean, if that's okay, if I can jump right in.
Please.
Sure, Leopold.
All right. Good, good. So, yeah. So my question was, how come that we live in an era where, for example, you know, the climate where everybody is apologetic if something goes wrong, you know, sensitive to others' needs. So I was wondering, given this climate, when is the Atheist Experience going to issue any apology towards the Catholic Church, perhaps for some insensitive comments?
You want the atheist? You think that the Atheist Experience should apologize for insensitive comments to the Catholic Church? Am I following?
Yeah, because I mean, I've heard that somebody make insensitive comments, like if somebody were to make hypothetically from the Atheist Community against the prostitutes that are referred to as quote sex workers, they would apologize. So I was wondering, I mean, when is the Atheist Experience going to do the same for the Roman Catholic Church?
I'm wondering if maybe you can help me out. What would be an example of like an offensive comment toward the Catholic Church?
Oh,
like if I were to say that the Catholic Church is like an international criminal cartel that protects pedophiles, would that be an example of like a thing that would be like offensive to the Catholic Church?
I mean, you're saying that hypothetically, but here's non-hypothetical things. This is from Matt Dillahunty. I can't remember the date, but I have the video here that says the Catholic Church should be destroyed, meaning my religion. Okay, here's another one. It is time to burn down the Catholic Church. And I'm talking for my religion. I'm sure the same applies to Islam for Muslims. So my question was, I mean, if somebody were to say that a brothel were to be destroyed, OnlyFans, for example, that is a brothel, there would be demands for apology.
So you're trying to make an analogy. I know you're not done, but I'm going to cut you off for a second. So what is the analogous property that you're identifying there? Because to me, you're propping up an analogy at which we can't actually identify the property that's analogous, right? Like one that you present,
yeah, so,
I agree with. The other one, you don't, or I don't agree with, and because they don't have that similar property for me to apply why I think one should be abolished versus the other.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you mean by abolished. I was asking about an apology. So when is that happening? Not to me,
I was asking
about like the people that you've offended. I mean, Catholics. I mean, I'm not easily offended, by the way. So like, I don't care. But I was just wondering, given that the atheist experience is willing to apologize to, quote, sex workers nowadays, when can the Catholics accept their apology?
Okay, so this is a mess out of the gate, Leopold. I'm sorry. So what I'm wondering is, so if something is said that offends somebody, okay?
Sure.
There's a range of ways that we can respond here. I think we need to assess why would it be offensive to you for Matt to say something like he's stating his opinion, right? That the Catholic Church should be dismantled or destroyed or burned down, figuratively speaking. Like, why is that offensive?
I would say that what's offensive to me is the inconsistent standard, because Matt, for example, is known to revile people who speak, even imply anything negative against prostitutes. So what I was saying is, for example, from Matthew's Twitter account, this is a quote.
Forget Matt. Hang on. Sorry. Like I gotta do this, because this isn't the Matt Dillahunty experience. It's the atheist experience, and Matt's not here. So if we're just talking about, let's say there's a statement, and I'll say it too. I'll say, I think if we're looking at organizations that do more harm than good in the world, I would also say that I think that the dismantling of the Catholic Church would be a good thing for humanity. Okay.
Sure.
So why? So I've now said something that may have offended you. Why should I apologize for that?
Well, I wouldn't say that I want you to apologize anytime you offend me. I'm just asking, why is it that certain groups, whether that be religious or non-religious, can expect to... So for example, I would have no problem, but had I made similar comments about, let's say, transgenderism or the LGBT pride parade, which I don't necessarily do... I wouldn't be, for example, welcome at Atheist Experience were I to be an atheist.
This goes back to what I said a second ago, which is what's the analogous property between what you're propping up, right? Like, you seem to presuppose that I have this thing that you guys are trying to dismantle and talk about, right? And then there's this other thing, and presuppose that that's on the same playing field. My argument is that they're not. There's not an analogous property there.
Yeah.
What is the analogous property between the two? Because one is clearly...
We're talking about my identity, right? I mean, I'm a Catholic.
Well, hang on. So if somebody were to say transgender people should be destroyed, it would be extremely easy for me to articulate why that's a problem, okay? What is wrong with that, and why such a person should reconsider their entire position and probably issue an apology, because they're causing harm with their words there. So what I'm asking you is, I'm saying I think that dismantling the Catholic Church would probably be a good thing for humanity. What's the harm that's being done? Articulate the harm so we can see. It's the same thing that Mike and I are talking about. It's figuring out why these things are analogous to you.
Right. So it's my identity, right, for once. So I was wondering.
Yeah, why we're not taking away your identity as a Catholic. I'm going to stop you when you make an error in your reasoning, because this is the problem I'm having. Okay. What you're doing is you'll go on to something and you think it's on the same level playing field as the thing you're criticizing. Right. So when you say you bring this, I identify as a Catholic. Me and Kenneth aren't taking that away from you and saying you can't identify as a Catholic, right? We're talking about the idea which you hold, and then the entailments of what the actual church itself has done, and looking at the harm, right? Now there has to be an analogous property to the thing that you're propping up. You can't just merely start from the fact alone that you think it's analogous. You have to actually justify why you think it's analogous.
Well, I've explained to you, you haven't explained anything. A religious group, right? You are targeting a religious group for this reason, which I'm fine with. I'm fine with that criticism. I have no problem. What I am not fine with, of course, is the double standard. That's, I guess, what really... Because I don't care. I mean, it's not like I'm offended or anything, actually. I'm just saying, personally, I find it really interesting.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to stop you again.
I should be able to talk for more than 20 seconds, right?
Yeah.
This is what you need to do, man. Leopold... So I'll give you 20 seconds to articulate the harm, because there's a distinction, an obvious distinction between saying this organization is doing more harm than good and should probably be dismantled, and making any statement at all that has anything to do with your individual identity. If you identify as a Catholic, you know, have fun, knock yourself out, enjoy yourself. No one's trying to take that away from you.
Well, I have an issue I just wanted to raise in the sense that there seems to be some like entailment of, so like, right, when I attack Catholicism as an organization and I see things like AIDS in Africa, or I see things where there's a direct entailment on what they're teaching, right, that has direct impact, that is not analogous to somebody identifying, right, the way that you think that it's analogous, because there isn't that same entailment, right? You don't have that entailment. They're not analogous. That's the whole point. Until you can get past that, I don't want you to address anything else. What is the analogy that you're distinguishing, or what is the property that's analogous that you're distinguishing?
Wait, I was muted all this time. I didn't even know.
I muted you.
Okay, so I want to know why you were asking me questions. I was supposed to ask you a question.
No, I'm asking you a question.
The reason why the host of the show...
Look, I'm not going to let you go on to talk about something being analogous if you can't actually have a justificatory position on why it's analogous. We're not going to start from the fact alone that you think they are. You're going to have to establish that. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to try.
Yeah, I've explained, because you're offending a large group of people based on something they identify with. So when you're, for example, making this sort of indictment against Roman Catholics, I'm fine with that, okay? As long as we can expect the same kind of treatment for others, but we don't.
You're begging the question again, because you're assuming that they're on the same playing field. If you can get it there, then help me out. But you can't just start from the fact alone, because when you make that statement, listen to what you're saying. You're making the statement that I can agree with you because it's analogous to this thing, but you're not being held to the same standard. My objection is they're not on the same fucking standard. So please, please make the case the work. You have work to do that you haven't done. If I was a teacher and you presented this to me, I would say, sit back down and do your work. You did not do it.
I mean, I did my work and I'm waiting for my answer, but you're not giving me, right? You're switching the...
I'm stopping you.
All that you're doing at this point, Leopold, you're complaining about this alleged double standard, but not doing anything to articulate that there even is a double standard here. Okay.
Yes.
I mean, you brought up sex workers, you brought up trans people. What the fuck? So people making statements about like eradicating sex workers or trans people, why is that in any way analogous to people saying that they think that the Catholic Church as an institution, not Catholics, the Catholic Church should be dismantled?
Yeah, so first of all, Catholic Church is Catholics. That's just a word game you're playing there. But more importantly, though, I never said that
it's not. If you're gonna play like stupid word games and not acknowledge like obvious distinctions, like the distinction between an organization and its members, okay? I live in a predominantly Catholic neighborhood. There's a Catholic church that's like legitimately like 100 feet over my shoulder right here, okay? And those people are not in the Vatican making the decisions. All right, there's a distinction between these families in my neighborhood who go to church on Sundays and just kind of do their thing and the larger institution. And that's super obvious. And we've lost the caller. Okay. So
it's a really simple task. It's like, I'm not going to let you start from the fact alone that you think it's analogous. You're going to have to try. You're going to have to do something, because if your criticism is that you start with the fact alone that these two things are analogous and there's some, like Kenneth said, there's some double standard. No, I just reject that you think they're analogous in any way, because one does actually need to be abolished, right? And there's an example of you could use law enforcement or things like that, where there is an actual means for maybe us to reform, right, what it means for law enforcement, right? The difference between what you're stating is that there isn't actually anything analogous to where there's harm being done to a society, where people's lives are being jeopardized. It's just something you want to start from the fact alone that it's analogous. You have to actually demonstrate that fact. If you think it's pedantic, you have to start somewhere by justifying
it. It's you know, people in the atheist community, including Matt, will stand up and people say hateful, bigoted bullshit about marginalized groups. Therefore.
Yeah. Well, and there's a similar person, you know, named Canadian Catholic that has a similar argument. You guys should have a conversation with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
You might both agree with every single point that you ever make to each other. But yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Well,
Moving on.
With that incredible start out of the way, let me make a couple quick announcements. For those who are still with us, The Atheist Experience is a production of the Atheist Community of Austin, which is a 501c3 charitable organization that is all about the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of religion and government. If that sounds like something that you would like to support, you can support the ACA. There's a few ways you can do that. All right, you can become a member. If you're watching this video on YouTube, you can look down there and click. There's a join button. I love our crew. Look at these guys. They're on top of everything. You can also support us on Patreon after you've clicked that join button. You can find us at patreon.com/theatheistexperience. We have a channel also. If you're not watching, if you like to get your content in audio form, we have a channel that houses all of the shows of the ACA in podcast form. Visit tiny.cc/AENpodcasts. I don't know why you would do that this week when you can, you know, look at J Mike, you know, on the video. But, you know, I don't know what you guys do out there in podcast land.
Too much hair. So then they have an option.
It is a lot of hair.
That's what I always go with. Yeah. It's too much hair. Especially if it's like me and Christy. It's like, that's way too much hair.
That, I mean, I don't know. That's quite a duo. I'm just visualizing it.
Me and Nate wasn't enough hair, which is why like the power somehow got manipulated. You know?
Okay.
So there's a balance somewhere in between.
People in the chat can argue about what the optimal level of host hair ratio is. Meanwhile, the rest of you can become a part of the Atheist Experience community in our fan-run Facebook page. You can find us on facebook.com/groups/AXPFG. In addition, we have a private fan group that can be found at facebook.com/groups/AXPPFG. All right. If you want to continue this discussion after the show, if you just can't get enough of us, you can hang out with us at ACD, our fan-run Discord server at tiny.cc/ACA Discord. Both Mike and myself will be on there afterward, taking additional questions, hanging out. And be sure to go check out our other ACA shows. As I mentioned at the top of the broadcast here, Truth Wanted, Secular Sexuality, Talk Heathen, and The Nonprofits, which The Nonprofits is really, really close to getting the 10,000 subscribers. They're like really close. So if you are so inclined, go check them out.
It's like 9.96.
You
can change. Everybody can change this right now. You have the power to change it.
That's right. Just be the change you wish to see in The Nonprofits' subscriber count, as Gandhi said.
Pulling double duty on the ACD today.
Yeah. Went there, came back. it's a good place to hang. All right, let's move on to some more callers here. Mo callers. We've got, it's an interesting name, Mr. Warlight in Arkansas wants to challenge the host, it says, with thoughts on spirituality. Mr. Warlight, what can we do for you?
Hey, this is Mr. Warlight. Hey, I watch this show quite a bit, you know. I'm kind of a fan, you know. But I would say that spirituality needs to be embraced more. I would say agnosticism is more rational, a more rational approach than either atheism or any religion. And
do me a favor before you keep going. Just do me. I need you to throw a couple definitions on the table. I need to know what you mean by spirituality and what you mean by agnosticism.
I concur.
Agnosticism. Agnosticism is the rejection. It's not a rejection of anything. It's basically a mindset. It's like okay. It's like you don't believe that there isn't a God, but you don't believe that there is a God. Atheism is basically, you don't believe that there's a God, and then any religion basically believes that there's either a God or a spiritual aspect. I believe the atheists, agnostics could even be religious. Like they could be Buddhists, they can be Jainists, anything like that, Taoists, that. But I believe spirituality is important because there's nothing that disproves.
Well, what is spirituality? Hold on. When you say spirituality is important, I don't know what that means. And if you're saying it's important, then it's important for me to know what you mean by spirituality.
Okay. I believe that it needs to be studied more. There's nothing that really disproves anything spiritual.
I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be rude. I just want to know what the definition of spirituality is.
Well, let me see.
And not like a Google one, what you mean by it. Because when you already gave atheist, And I don't agree with your definition of atheist necessarily. I mean something different. So we're already on a rocky standpoint. But first, before we get there, I want to know what you mean by spirituality.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Mr. Warlight, speak up. We're struggling with the audio feed here.
We maybe get him in the queue. We can get him back in, hopefully, if he comes back. But I want to make a point real fast, is that I was a spiritualist. I came out of that. And it's not the same meaning that New Age spiritualists use it today, necessarily. So there's a lot of different definitions. I'm under the assumption that I don't think anybody's proposed a universal definition of spiritualism. It seems to be like just something in accordance with appeals to emotion. That's all I ever hear is that I have some appeals to emotion and I want to attach something to it that's beyond like the natural world. And I don't know, that might have methodological utility to you, but I don't know what like the actual epistemic justification is. And so if you actually analytically define what spiritualism is, we can actually explore that and see if it's something either rooted in reality or rooted in imagination. And I'm under the assumption that I think it's rooted under imagination, but hopefully we can get them back on.
Yeah. I mean, it looks like the call has dropped. I don't know if they're trying to get him back. Listen, hey, Mr. Warlight, if you're around, call back. If you're still listening, we want to engage with your call here. Well, that's a missed opportunity. Yeah. Spirituality tends to be used, in my experience, as this just umbrella catch-all term to describe a set of experiences without providing any really clear definition. So anyway, let's move on. We've got Tim in Tennessee. Tim in Tennessee says you get confused.
Oh, hey, guys.
Yeah. Thanks between knowledge, belief, burden of proof, how they interact with each other. Let's unpack some of this stuff.
Yeah. There's two scenarios, and they're really, really quick ones that I guess I kind of get confused on. I think this topic to me is confusing in general. But the two scenarios that I think about a lot that I would love to hear your thoughts on is the first one is if you have two theists, one who says, I know there is a God, and one who says, I believe in God. Do they have the same burden of proof? And then why or why not? And then to kind of go the other one, just so you can kind of get where my confusion might be. One thing I hear all the time from the hosts of the show is not that they say there is no God, but I'm not convinced. But then I also hear things like, but I'm like 90%+ sure that there isn't one. So I'd be interested to know, well, what if you had like an atheist like that and a Christian who says, well, I believe in God, but I'm only like 70% sure. How does the burden proof work in that scenario? And I probably my confusion here probably comes from not fully understanding the topic of knowledge and belief and how they relate together. So I love to hear your thoughts on those scenarios on this topic in general.
So I tend to be a JTB guy. Should I just dive in with that and maybe we can pick holes in that?
Yeah, I think the JTB thing's a good thing. And I just want to make a point to people that are into philosophy. We're going to set what are called Gettier cases aside because that makes everything really sticky really quickly. Yeah.
So I found it useful when I was thinking about this stuff. So you'll hear a lot of folks say that knowledge is a subset of belief. Okay. So belief is just the state of being convinced that something is the case, right? So if we're talking about belief, I mean, you can believe all kinds of shit. It doesn't necessarily rise to the level of knowledge. For something to be counted as knowledge, you'll hear people talk about justified true belief or JTB. All right. Now we've got some conditions. Okay. For a belief to count as knowledge, it has to be justified. Okay. There has to be something there to support this belief as being true. All right. You'll hear us talk about true being that which is consistent with or that which corresponds with reality. All right. And then you have to be convinced it's true. So when you get these elements coming together, you've got something that we can, you know, describe as knowledge. So not merely belief that is justified, true, and you believe it. Does that help at all?
Yeah. No, I think so. Okay. Yeah. I think I follow that.
Regarding the question about burden of proof, though, so taking it to that next step, all right, if you've got two theists, one says, I believe Jesus rose from the dead. The other one says, no, I know Jesus rose from the dead. They're both taking the position that the proposition Jesus rose from the dead is true. They're both convinced of it, Okay. So if they're making that claim, if they're saying Jesus rose from the dead, then they would have an equal burden of proof.
Okay. So the, like the confidence level. Yeah. So I guess I was thinking maybe, you know, before was like, well, the burden of evidence might vary depending on how confident you're trying to get someone to, right? So if someone was trying to get someone to the point of saying, they're like, this is a fact that I'll should accept, versus like, this is something that I've been convinced by, that even though that confidence level between these two people is pretty different, the burden is still the same. It's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if the confidence level is different. Like what is the confidence level that's required for someone to be convinced? I think you're either convinced or you're not, you know.
Yeah, I'm on an aspect of that. If you just take the proposition to be true, your confidence level to me is irrelevant. Like the claim has a burden of proof. Whether or not the state of affairs is actually the state of affairs, that requires a burden of proof. I don't care if you're like I'm 1% confident that, you know, JFK is going to come back or something or whatever it might be, right? Like it doesn't matter. Like if you think that there's 1% chance, like I want to know what it is that you think justifies you even having any shift of confidence to that.
Yeah. Even if you're saying something like JFK might come back. Well, that's a claim. We'd have to be like, well, why do you think that's possible?
It implies there's something justificatory for you to hold the belief.
Okay. I'll think about that more. And I'll answer the atheist versus Christian one, because obviously even though that the atheist there might say go to a higher degree, that person is still in this spot of saying, I'm not making a position here. That's why it would still switch over to the theist for the burden, right?
Well, I mean, it's less about what position someone holds and more about what their posture is. So if you encounter an atheist who's like, I'm convinced there's no God. I believe there is no God. They have adopted a burden of proof. You'd want to ask them why, you know, and let them explain it. You'll run into some other stuff. I mean, if someone was to tell me that they believed in a God that was perfectly just and perfectly merciful, I would say that's a contradiction. I don't think that can exist. That strikes me as being impossible. So there I would go, because of this, because that is necessarily contradictory, I would say that God doesn't exist because it can't.
Yeah.
So that's where there would be a distinction. But again, I'd be adopting the burden of proof when the instant that I say I'm convinced such a God can't exist. I would have to show my work.
Yeah, and I actually, like, I take a burden of proof on some of that, right? Like, Thomists that I talk to, they take a position that God is pure act. And we don't have to get into the whole nuances of, like, potentiality and actuality and all that. But the point to me is that when you say that God is pure act, it means that he could only create the world in one way. It implies something called necessitarianism, which is the idea that the world could only be one way, which I think is self-defeating, right? So I could then make the inference from those rules to say, okay, well, if it implies necessitarianism, then that God does not exist, because necessitarianism results in what you call modal collapse, and you just don't want that. I mean, some people might argue against it, but for me, I'm going to adopt the burden of proof on that specific God or that specific analytic definition, because I can actually show why it's just not coherent. Not even just not coherent, it's just contradictory to believe in.
Right.
So yeah, me and Kenneth had a conversation about this before the show. It's just, you're going to have to supply something when someone goes like, well, you can't prove that some, you know, like maybe some definition of God we've never heard of doesn't exist. It's like, well, yeah, I can't possibly know what you haven't analytically defined to me. Right. But you know, I'm not going to make the statement that the proposition God doesn't exist is in and of itself a contradiction. I'm not going to make those types of claims, but I can't adopt a burden of proof on Christianity, for example. I will take that burden of proof, but just depends on what God we're talking about from my perspective.
Gotcha. Yep. Okay. Yeah. So I'll think about that more. And that's really all I had. It's always been something that's like, well, this is interesting. Like, and so I know I've watched Matt Hunty's video on it before, and it was confusing to me, but I think the way you guys kind of broke it down was helpful. So thanks. And I'll think about that more and just kind of, how that impacts me. So thanks, guys.
I want to ask you one more thing, because this goes into a thing about atheism and agnosticism and that whole kind of well, I believe agnosticism is lacking, you know, the belief, and some atheists are going to take a definition like that. My thing is, doesn't it really just matter what we mean by whatever utterance we say? Because really, it's just some grunt we make. But doesn't it, like, focusing on like what you mean by this is fine, right? But it seems like when you come down to it, rather than playing a semantic game, I'd rather just know what you mean. If someone goes, well, I think you're an agnostic, J. Mike, and I'm like, well, no, I'm an atheist. Like, that's fine. They can take that position, right? But I'm going to let them know until you like really give me an argument or something like that for the God you believe in or define it. That's what's going to predicate my, where I shift the burden of proof onto myself. And I'm okay with taking that.
Yeah.
You know, we could run
God's a squared circle. I don't believe in it. Right.
Your God's a married bachelor. We could run this in real time because Tim, you're a theist, right?
Correct.
So do you want to talk about it? I mean, like what do you believe in? Why? What we do here.
You know, I have, this kind of goes into why I've had the question that I asked you guys. If you know the name like John Lennox, he was influenced by a lot by C.S. Lewis. I have been interested in how they have talked about God and a lot of their arguments. You guys have heard them show tons of times, and that's why I wasn't sure if I wanted to use them right away. But you know, there's things like here are different things that we look at nature, right? So the fact that things exist, the fact that consciousness has risen, the fact that, and this is probably more of a complicated debate, but like there seems to be the fact that humans evolved either spiritually and or suspicious of things. And so there's this puzzlingness to why is it that everything seems to either appear. I think even Richard Dawkins has used the quote, nature is not designed, it just appears to be designed. But then I've heard these guys kind of go, okay, but then why does it appear that way? So this kind of
it's going to be ad hoc, right? Like, yeah. to make that point to say, like, you just look at the situation and go, well, look at this, but not realizing like the best odds of survival or reproduction in an environment or adaptation or these types of things. Like, right. Like we can look at diffusion of gas or snowflakes, right. That seem to have this like ordered complex type of thing, but not knowing the cause of it and why it's that way. Right. Like if you're going to just assume it's ordered and I make this conclusion that anything ordered must have an intelligent designer or whatever. I mean, the fact that you can posit an ad hoc perspective is we can do that we can view that as a hypothesis, but I don't know why we would do that in lieu of ignorance of the actual facts that could get us, because right. What I'm going to ask is like, I don't see the logical contradiction of order absent a God. I don't see the fact that we look at something like adaptation and then we go after the fact, like, wow, these things are adapt. Like, right. It just presumably seems that way when you try to account for the data in that way, as opposed to kind of starting epistemically from the ground up without any presuppositions or assumptions, right?
Right. No, and so these are you know, topics I would have to think more about. But I think I went to my initial conversation starter. These kind of arguments, and you guys have heard these forever. they're at some level. I can even sit here and admit at some level. Not the world's greatest argument. And that's why I was kind of with this idea. Well, I find them still, for some reason, semi-convincing. That's why I would say, I do believe. But I also sit there and go, I know there's a problem here with some of these arguments. So I have been convinced by them. Whether or not I can choose that or not, I have. But then at the same time, I also go, but I also think that there's a lot of room for error with these arguments. And that's why, that kind of goes into what we just talked about. And
sure. Agree like that you're the way you kind of interpret these things, like from your own mental state, right, is not actually like indicative of what the state of affairs could be, right? Like there's going to be an independent mechanism or methodology for that. Correct. Like you would agree, not bogging down on like, oh, it kind of appears this way. That might get in the way of whatever the methodology is that doesn't account for those types of biases. Right. Do you understand the point I'm trying to make?
Let me try to. The way I understood it was maybe this is not the point you're making, but what I think I heard was, you know, if you put the God claim there, you might stop from getting other possible true answers. Is that
well,
what
or,
I'm kind of going with?
Or you can fall victim to things like confirmation bias, where you're interpretation of the data can be influenced heavily by, you know, your preconceived notions or biases, right? It sounded to me a minute ago like you said that you need to think about this stuff more. And I would never in a million years discourage somebody from thinking about this stuff more. But it always sort of drives me nuts when people say that, when I want to talk to them about what they believe and why. Because as of right now, you are convinced that a set of propositions related to like a God belief are true. And something got you there. So there's if we take a snapshot of where you're at right now and whether or not you have good reasons to believe what you believe, there's a conversation there that can be had no matter how sophisticated your knowledge is of all these different arguments.
Sure.
I constantly find myself engaging with people and wishing that they would just do that and just take that snapshot and do sort of a self inventory and go, well, do I have good reasons for believing what I believe? And if not, to adjust accordingly. Because the longer that you hold on to a belief that may not be justified and then go searching for ways to justify it, the more you're just letting yourself stay susceptible to things like confirmation bias, motivated reasoning. And it becomes, I think, even harder and harder to get closer to just following the evidence where it leads.
Yeah. Because you can just separate what you can kind of posit this way, right? We need to separate what I'm convinced of versus actually what's justificatory or
exactly.
justification for it, right? If we want to do that, that's the most honest approach.
And again, you know, these are things if you want to talk about something I've been thinking about, honestly, just over the past week or two, I'm not going to be super great at defending it because, like I said, it's kind of a new thought, but something I've been kind of thinking about over a week or two has been, why is it that humans are religious to begin with? You know, if we went back in time to when religion and spirituality first started, you know, I know you guys had that talk, what is spirituality, but, you know, if we went back, you know, to start a religion, I'd be interested to know what you guys think about why it started. Because to me, it seems, I do believe in evolution and stuff, so I don't know if I see anything.
Is it advantageous? Let me ask you, is it advantageous to, this is an example I think is brought up on the show a lot, but is it not advantageous to run away from a potential noise in the bush, given that your traits will actually be passed on, as opposed to investigating what you think is causal agent or is agency within the bush, right? It seems that the person that might go there and gets mauled by the lion, there's no passing on of the traits, but the one that assumes some type of agent causation does pass that on. So to me, I don't see the logical contradiction in that being applicable for a type of naturalism or evolution.
What Mike's pointing to here is there's a sort of misconception people have of thinking that our brains are like optimized to be reasonable, that what was selected for was, you know, being rational. But if you've got two, you know, sort of prehistoric, you know, pre-human beings, right, our ancestors, you know, moseying their way through the jungle, and one sees the bush rustling and is like, oh shit, it's a ghost, and runs off, and the other one goes, I'm gonna wait and see, you know, let's I don't want to jump to a wrong conclusion here, you know, who's gonna survive and pass on their genes, right? So we're wired to be superstitious, fearful, stupid creatures.
And like that's a bigger point to say is, like, I don't know what it is about looking towards a natural fact to like that somehow logically inferring, say, like a God behind it, as opposed to having a rival theory of just natural mechanics, because it seems to be underdetermined unless you can actually establish something that separates it, like a novel prediction. If you can show that, like, hey, well, we posit God as the explanatory scope and it's more virtuous, but it'd be more virtuous because of some novel fact that separates the naturalistic theory. And when we actually look at the data, we don't need that extra ontology of God. We don't need to posit that. It never adds anything to the theory that we haven't already figured out, absent the assumption.
Yeah. And to sort of circle back to your question about, you know, the origins of religions. I mean, look, religions serve purposes. You know, if you're living, you know, millennia ago, and you don't know anything about the world. You know, you probably haven't traveled more than a couple miles from where you were born, and the, you know, the lightning is scary and the night's scary and there's noises in the dark, and you know, you're scared to die and illness is happening. You don't understand what's going on. You don't know what infections are. You don't know what germs are. So to try to make sense of it all, you know, it, and to create, you know, social cohesion, it made sense for people to invent myths and to rally around them as tribal groups. I mean, it's, you know, it's part of our history. You know, like it's been said that, that religions were our first, it was like a precursor to something like philosophy in the same way that alchemy would be a precursor to something more useful like chemistry, right? Astrology, you know, coming before astronomy, these types of things. So, it's vestiges of our primitive minds.
Sure. So something you said though, that, you had mentioned, you know, if you're living in this, in the small community, right, and you're not exposed to the world. But I guess that's sort of where I find the origin thing still interesting, though, because these early religions across the globe seem to have a lot of things in common, even though they are very isolated. I mean, there's differences, of course. I mean, but like, you guys would say, right, they all have some kind of flood myth. Many of them have a story about a dying god. And I sit there and go, okay, well, they all do this, and okay, there might be some evolutionary explanation, but then even if we can explain it that way, why did evolution create that in the first place?
Well, evolution wouldn't have created that stuff. But if we talk about things like religions, you know, a lot of religions having flood myths. Well, where did people live? People live near bodies of water because we kind of need water. And you know, when you live by a river, you know, I mean, rivers flood. You know, when you talk about things like, you know, myths around dying gods, people are afraid of death. People are still afraid of death. So the common denominator in all of this stuff is human experience, human beings.
Yeah. We do this with morality, right? Like, real fast, and we do this with morality. Like, right, we find a common shared experience of desires and intentional states that what we prefer, what we don't prefer. And people now make this extra assumption that, like, maybe there's this mind-independent fact that makes morality objective, right? But it's some extra assumption that we don't need. We can just recognize, like, well, here's the commonality. But you're not going to say commonality, therefore, you know, it's true or there's some true thing to it. It's just that we can probably point to, in the case of morality, for example, that we just have similar desires and what it's like to be an agent and to experience pain and these types of things. Does it elucidate some independent, like, reason or some new thing we should use to explain it? I think the God thing is the same thing, or spirituality, or whatever you posit there. Like, you have that work still has to be done on its own, from my perspective, not merely pointing out a trend and then inferring. Because my next question is, what's the logical? What are the inference rules? Because I don't know that that is valid of an inference rule, from my perspective.
Yeah.
So, I want to say the reason why I use the evolution word, it might have been the wrong phrase to use there, but I was more kind of thinking about, like, you kind of said it, right? Like, they all these people, they all live near water, but then psychologically, they all understood to make this story. So that's sort of why I attribute that to evolution. That might have been the wrong word to use, but to your current question, sorry, could you rephrase that for me?
Which one? Which question, Kenneth?
The last question.
I think that was you, J. Mike. And we're going to, we'll have to end the call after this. So let's put a tidy little bow on this. So we can move on to
this
some other callers.
Kind of came to the top of my head. So, I mean, there could be errors with it, but my point, I guess, was that there's no inference rule from commonality to, like, what the common property is between the things you're looking at, like the civilizations having these kind of common beliefs and things like that, or the world floods, or that it's indicative that a world flood actually happened. It could just be indicative of that there, like Kenneth said, there's this local flood because that happens and there's a common property there. It doesn't extrapolate to that inference rule of, therefore, there's a global flood. The same way, to me, the fact that we have common desires or intentional states or what I prefer, you know, to be done to me, doesn't, like, it, that does, in and of itself, when we go, there's a commonality between all agents that they want to be treated this way, that we can infer some mind independent, like, moral ought out in the world somewhere that we should be in accord with, right? The whole idea is that it's not a valid inference from my perspective to just infer that. It seems to be like, if you listed these out in premises, that the structure would be invalid.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'll let you guys keep going. To your next guy. Thank you both. These are things I definitely need to think about. It's, you guys went through it. When you are a theist and you are generally trying to work through these questions, they're rough to go through. And you're like, okay, well, what? Sure. You know, you just try to hit different angles. So I appreciate the call, guys.
Well, I appreciate your honesty, Tim, and how cordial you've been and understanding and listening. And sorry if me or Kenneth kind of bulldozed over.
Oh, you're good.
I just wanted to appreciate how open you are, because that's something that I always want to recognize from a theist.
You're going about it in the right way. I mean, and earlier on Talk Heathen, I talked about how, like, the goal of all of us, I mean, our goal isn't to, like, convert people to atheism or to knock them off of their religious beliefs. Our goal is to exercise our critical thinking skills and, you know, believe true things and not believe false things. So as long as we're engaged in that process, you know, we're doing good work. So yeah, I hope you call back in the future. Have a great week. I want to issue yet another. I'd like to get that Mr. Warlight guy back on.
Me too. That
could have been going somewhere interesting. So I really hope they call back in. We've got room. So look, I've got breaking news. You magnificent people have done it. Nonprofits hit 10,000 subscribers. So thank you. And I think we can say that it was because of me and J-Mike. So for future reference, when people on nonprofits are talking about it, it can be like, maybe like a thanks Kenneth and J-Mike for making it happen. Along with all of you, of course, as well, who actually did the work of subscribing.
Yeah. We take credit for all 10,000.
So. That is correct. We're going to celebrate this momentous occasion, by rolling a promo.
Yeah, it's a generally good idea to not just go up and tug on anybody's tail under any circumstances, but in particular, if that tail is connected to somebody's rectum, you could be doing some damage.
Then you're probably going to get the first bit of life, and then when those bits of life interact with other bits of life, new bits of life happen, and then suddenly you got people and the internet and JFK conspiracies and all kinds of stuff.
Dude, we gotta get our TV show picked up by Netflix. Like, what do we do? What do we add?
Like, let's like impregnate people with parasitic eggs.
Michael wants to talk about how to talk to theists. I'm speaking your language, right, Nate? With the aboot, right?
That's yep. Oh yeah.
It's just cultural sensitivity.
I can summarize that, which is,
hey, I think you're really cool, Matt. I don't think you've had a good conversation with a really smart theist, but I'm a really smart theist, and Sam Harris agrees with this point that I made, and somebody else agrees with this point that I made. So let me point out how science actually presupposes the existence of God, and that philosophical naturalism, which I know you don't hold to, which is irrelevant to this.
I mean, you just keep going and going and going. Try decaf, first of all.
Great. Man, listen, Matt needs to go into that, like, extra chipmunk gear more often on the show. Cram more content into a shorter show. Just a thought. So keep tuning into those shows, folks. We've got more callers. I want to, you know, reiterate what we always talk about. Theists get priority. Okay. So we have some theists. We got some atheists on the line, but if you're a theist, we want you to call in. If you're a theist and we dropped your call earlier, call back in. Come on. We're here for you. This one I'm psyched about, because this call screening thing is giving me just something juicy to dig into. We've got Alvin in North Carolina who wants to talk about how it is probable that the Bible is true. Is that what you want to talk about, Alvin?
Yes. An analogy would be if you, rolled 100 snake eyes in a row, but you determined scientifically that there was nothing unusual. They weren't trick dice. They weren't magnets or nothing like that. How would you explain that?
How would I? Okay, so if I rolled 100 snake eyes in a roll with unloaded dice, how would I explain that? My immediate gut reaction is to go, that's weird, and to go, I don't know why that happened. my mind would start going to, well, maybe there's something going on here that I don't know. Maybe the dice are loaded in a way that I don't understand. You know, there would be a gap in my knowledge where I would have to shove a big fat, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't see the logical contradiction that they couldn't do that.
Yeah, it'd be weird. It'd be spooky.
My other question is, like, in order for this to be analogous, reference to what you think is 100 snake eye rolls, what is that for your belief.
For the Bible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the Bible, there's a theory. It's called the theory of biblicalpatterns.com. In fact, that's the URL.
The URL is in the Bible?
Patterns in, no, I just gave you the URL of the theory, the theory of biblicalpatterns.com. And it's 100 patterns in the very first verse of the Bible that are significantly beyond chance.
Alvin, is this your website?
Website. Yes, it's my website. It's my theory.
Oh my okay.
I'll tell you what. Rather than Easy. Now you've gotten your URL out there for the world. So rather than continue to plug the website, let's actually talk about the substance of this, of what you're talking about. So it's, unless I misheard you, did you say there are 100 patterns in the first verse of the Bible?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Can you give me one?
Several times in the past.
Well, now you're talking to us. Can you give me one?
For example, if you take the letters times the product of the letters over the words times the product of the words, you get pi to 5 significant digits. And if you do the same thing with the equivalent verse in the New Testament, you get e to 5.
Numbers are just, no, hold on. There's no prescriptive meaning there. So I'm just going to reject that. I don't. Like the conspiracy aspect of like doing numerology.
Well, hang on. We got to, Alvin, do you understand what Mike means by a prescriptive meaning?
Yeah. I mean, you can look at the website and see the math.
No, we're done with the website. We're done with
the website. We're just talking to you. We're just going to deal with the merits of the claims themselves.
Yeah.
I'm sure your website's going to get some traffic off of this. So don't worry about the website. Just let's talk about the ideas.
Okay. For that equation and all its related patterns, just one of 100. It's like a trillion to one that those could occur by chance.
Are you doing this addition and these math problems with the English language translation of the Bible?
No, Hebrew.
With Hebrew. Does it work in English?
No, it wouldn't work in English.
Languages?
No, you have to use the original Hebrew because that's the inspired word of God.
Could we do something similar with other books that have nothing to do with, you know, spirituality?
Yeah.
Find passages in other books.
Experiments. Yes, I've looked at, well, I have a standard set of like 20 million sentences, and I've tried the 100 patterns, and you don't get past about the 10th or 12th one in these 20 million sentences.
Okay.
Sorry, go ahead, Ken.
Let's say that you have identified like the Genesis 1:1 and some New Testament verse, and there appears to be this correlation between their sort of mathematical properties. What does that tell us about anything?
Well, that proves that a higher intelligence had to have written Genesis 1:1. Now it could have been
Wait. Why on earth would it prove that? Why on earth would it prove that?
Because just like rolling 100 snake eyes, if they're not trick dice, there had to be something supernatural occurring.
I have something worse than that. Let's grant it, right? Let's just grant it. It can't be done without an intelligent designer. That doesn't get you to that God is that intelligent designer. Could it not still be consistent with deception that somebody is deceiving you? Especially something intelligent.
I don't know
why aliens wouldn't be intelligently deceiving you in that. Like, where's the contradiction in that as opposed to a God?
Well, I proved that it could not have been an extraterrestrial from, you know, another planet, because the patterns of Genesis 1:1 are in the universal consciousness. I show that all over the place.
What does that have to do with beings inside the universe?
Yeah.
It proves that the person that wrote Genesis 1:1 had to have created a universal constant.
It does no such thing, Alvin. Let me ask you this. Let me just really quick. Okay. I really want to try to break this down like as simply as I possibly can and not overcomplicate it. What's the verse in the New Testament that matches Genesis 1:1 in this way?
John 1:1.
Okay. Do any other verses in the Bible do this?
I haven't looked at any other verses, but a lot of other people have found a lot of patterns in a lot of verses.
Come on, man. Is this serious?
Yes, I'm serious.
So you've got the number of letters in a verse matches up mathematically in some way with the number of letters in some other random ass verse. And you think that this is evidence of some intelligence?
The mathematics is a trillion, 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 trillion to one.
So what?
If you take all the patterns associated with it.
Right, and still, so what?
I don't even think that your assessment of that is right.
Even if it is. So what, Alvin? So what? Get me past so what?
Because it's improbable.
So what? We're stuck at so what? Well, help me, get me past so what, man.
How does, okay. I just don't get how improbability gets to the fact that what you assume is in accord with God's utterances actually is that case and not of deception. I don't get how that, where that flows.
Yeah, but what is the improbability? Because, I mean, it's improbable for someone to win the lottery. It's improbable that my ass was going to be the sperm that found the egg. There's all kinds of improbable shit that happens all the time. So I'm stuck on so what. I'm going to give you one more chance to get us past so what. And then if we can't get there, we're going to have to move on to other callers.
Okay, the chance of winning the lottery is like 1 in 300 million, but 300 million people play. So it's 1-to-1. Sooner or later, somebody's going to win. This is the very first verse of the most read book in the Bible that matches 100 patterns, and they're all over universal constants.
But you're not substantiating any patterns at all. All you're saying is that there are patterns and you figured those out. To me, it just sounds arbitrary because I'd actually have to need to look to see your how you actually calculated the figures in the first place.
And the New Testament isn't in Hebrew either.
Well, that was the second thing I was going to say.
There's like layers on layers of why this makes no sense, Alvin. So, if we go from something improbable appears to have happened based on how you're interpreting the data here, okay? So what? Improbable things happen all the time.
But I've done the math. It's like between Genesis 1:1 and fulfilled prophecies, it's the same level as the fine tuning of the universe for life.
So what?
123.
Okay, look. Hold on, real fast.
Okay, scientists know.
Stop, real fast. You say it's the same as like the calculations of the constants of the universe, right? I have several problems with it, okay? Because when we talk about the constants, I don't know that when we use something like the mass of a neutrino being in like kilograms or whatever, that we're not making a mistake of measurement from the offset. So I don't know what that means. I'll set that to the side. And typically the analogy that I give there is like, it could be the case that we measure LeBron James in like, let's say light years, right? And he's 10 times 46 to the light years in height. And we could say if he was 10 times 47 to the light years in height or 10 times to the negative 45 light years in height, he couldn't play in the NBA. And we would be right because those figures are the difference between a 60-foot lumberjack and a 6-inch tall LeBron James, right? But what we could do is say in a fluctuation of inches, a more precise accurate measurement of the constants, we could go, okay, it's just the case that if we measure in inches and we say there's a 5% difference in LeBron James's height in inches, not only would he still play in the NBA, he'd still probably be one of the best, right? So it doesn't analogously, I don't know what the constants you refer to are because it just seems to be arbitrary. And then secondly, when you talk about the calculations, I don't know that your calculations are even precise or not just begging the question for the conclusion that you want in the first place.
Nothing about this speaks in any way. There's no way to link what you're saying to the idea that the Bible is anything other than just like any other book. And you can play with numbers all day long. We could do it with LeBron. We could talk about, LeBron is, like 6'8", but his number is 23 and 2 + 3 = 5. And if you have 5 times this, you can drive yourself nuts with numbers playing all kinds of stupid games. You're not proving anything, man. And you don't seem to understand that. So we're going to have to move on to other callers because we are not going to get past the
exactly. My question is like, I don't know where the line is drawn on the conspiracies that you don't accept in virtue of numerology, but the ones that you do accept in virtue of the confirmation bias you have with the Bible. I'm not convinced that you're serious with that claim. Yeah. And if you are, I would analyze the claim, but I think we should move on.
It's a bummer. I'm going to move on. We got Mr. Warlight back. So let's bring him up to the front of the line here. Mr. Warlight, I forget where we were in the call. You were talking about agnosticism. You were talking about spirituality. We were having a hard time nailing down what spirituality is. Let's try to pick this back up, my friend.
Yeah. I was giving my definition of spirituality, which I believe to be the quality of anything related to soul or spirit.
Why is an atheist would I accept the soul?
Yeah, that's not a super useful definition.
Not a super useful definition. Come on, guys.
It's like if somebody asked me, because now you got LeBron in my head, Mike. If it was like someone asked me, what is basketball? And I was like, well, you know, it's a game that has the quality of basketballness.
You're playing, dude, that applies to any definition ever. Nothing's concrete.
Yeah, but if you can't actually look, if your explanation, look, Warlight, if your explanation involves things that we can't even presume is a candidate explanation, like a soul or spirits, I'm going to have to stop you there. I'm not going to just go, yeah, you know what? That checks out. Let's move on and go to the next thing because I grant souls and spirits. No, it's the same problem. You still haven't substantiated something. Why am I going to, if we have an issue about spirituality not being substantiated in the first place, why am I going to let your analytic definition be something that's also not substantiated? Doesn't make any sense.
Spirituality is, man. I know what spirituality is.
I was a spiritualist. This is my background. This is what I came out of.
There's a distinction between semantics and just trying to get on the same page with definitions, man. So, I mean, what it says for the call screening software here is that your claim is spirituality is more rational than atheism/religion. So out of the gate, I'm super confused by what you're talking about. So if you're saying that spirituality is something that engages with the spirit or souls, then you've still got all your work ahead of you to establish that spirits and souls are a thing. So maybe that's where we should start. Maybe the initial claim is the soul is a thing.
Okay. Spirits or souls are a thing is what you're saying, right?
Well, I'm asking you what you're saying.
Okay. I'm saying there's nothing that just proves anything soul or spiritual related, supernatural. There's nothing that just proves that. Therefore, agnosticism is the most rational stance on that. We can assume, we can say we don't know. And then you can be an atheist, but we can also say, hey, but I don't really know. And so atheism, we can't really say that's the most rational stance.
Warlight, there's a leprechaun in my car right now, and you can't prove that I don't have a leprechaun in my car, but you'd probably be reasonable to say that there's not a fucking leprechaun in my car, right?
I can say, I don't know if there's a leprechaun in your car. I can say...
Yeah, but yeah, based on the reality that we share and the fact that you don't experience leprechauns, you'd probably say it's reasonable that I don't actually have a leprechaun in your car. Why? Because there's not an implicit or empirical basis for leprechauns, correct?
This thing is midgets. Is the color green real? Or the green clothes is gold real? Can there be a little midget that broke into your car?
You know what you should do is just like answer Mike's question. instead of going off on some other tangent, man. I mean, so like if say we were saying something like it is more, I mean, you're talking about what's more rational. So if I was saying like, it's more reasonable to believe that we can interact with Zeus than that we can't. Okay. And I was to take the position and say, well, you can't prove that Zeus isn't real. Therefore I'm justified in my conclusion. Do you see what a mess this is logically?
No, you're saying that you're justifying your belief in Zeus. I'm saying I'm justifying my non-belief in Zeus or my non-belief that there isn't a Zeus. Therefore, you know, I believe in as above, so below. Nothing really exists, you know, or just all manifestations of atoms and stuff that is here, but we can't explain why.
What are you talking about? You're all over the map, man. I mean, this call, I mean, this is like watching laundry in the dryer when there's no like static cling sheet and stuff's like sticking together and then going apart. And it's like what are you talking about,
dude? Yeah, why you gotta throw insults at me, man? Why you gotta throw insults at
me? Look,
I'm not throwing insults at you. I'm specifically asking you, what are you talking about? We need a thesis.
You haven't even put anything on the table for us to analyze.
What I'm talking about, you threw in the leprechaun analogy. So what I'm talking about is, okay, agnosticism says we do not know if there's a God. We do not know if there's not a God, if there is a God, right? But we can't prove either one. Therefore, agnosticism is the rational sense.
Let me ask you this. If you don't know if there's a God or not, do you believe in a God?
No.
So would that just hypothetically, would a person who doesn't believe in a God be an atheist?
An atheist says there is no God. So they believe that
is not accurate.
Yeah. Look,
man, what is an agnostic?
Well, look, look. So words are not prescriptive. This is just a simple lesson on how language works. Okay, language is not prescriptive. It doesn't make prescriptions on how we ought to use a word. It's descriptive. And do you know how it changes? It changes in virtue of ad populum, how people use the word over time and the majority of people that use it. Guess what? The majority of people use atheist to mean that they do not accept that a God exists. And people can say that there's a change in the definition and that's a problem. They would go against any linguistic principle that it's descriptive, and they would be arguing in favor of a prescriptive use of language, which is what a lot of people do. I like to get into philosophy, and there's times where it's like, I kind of understand why people want to use the no God definition, but every time I back out of it, it doesn't seem like anyone holds a consistent position, especially when we talk about agnosticism, which deals with knowledge, okay?
Right.
If I have a position about agnosticism that deals with knowledge, I can apply that to whether or not I'm a theist or an atheist. So for you to exclude that and put it as its own category, to me, doesn't make any sense in virtue of what we've actually come to a definition on in terms of knowledge as opposed to a state of belief. Now, you can disagree with that, and I will accept that because language is not prescriptive. But what I'm more interested in is what you mean, right? And we won't get anywhere if you can't tell me, if you can't tell me anything tangible about the spiritual thing that you potentially believe in, and you can't even analytically lay it down to me in things that are rooted in reality, then I'm justified in not accepting it. Right. And then if you present things that are contradictory, I'm even justified in saying it doesn't exist. So it's going to be analytically defined on what you give me. And if you give me something that's incoherent or contradictory, then it doesn't exist.
And everything in this call is framed around the question of what is more rational. So you've put stuff on the table about souls and spirits. You've sort of misused agnosticism as if it's some sort of like mutually exclusive category that's separate from atheism, which it isn't. And you've still got all of your work ahead of you to demonstrate what's more rational about all the soul and spirit shit.
You know what a soul and a spirit is. Spirituality pertains to that.
No, I don't know what a soul is because it has no basis in reality. I'm not going to let you say you know what a soul is when I don't hold a justified true belief on what a soul is.
Just tell us what a soul is, man.
Oh, hey, when I say we cannot disprove spirituality, I'm saying we cannot disprove the existence of souls and spirits.
What's a soul?
What a soul and spirit is, right? So you know what's a soul. So stop pretending
what's
like
a soul?
Not giving the right definition.
Hold on.
Wait, I really want him to do it. What is a soul?
An unfalsifiable proposition is what he's giving.
I don't know. Maybe he's about to blow my mind. What's a soul?
A soul is basically yourself. Like it's yourself, but it's like in another realm of existence, like another verse. Like we have this universe, we have parallel universes. A soul is you, but
can we falsify it?
Same as spirit, but like,
can we falsify what you're saying?
There's some essence of me that exists on some other plane. So now Mike's question is the perfect follow-up.
Because this really matters when you talk about we can't know X or Y to not be true. If what you present in the first place is unfalsifiable, you've disguised this whole entire thing as a thing we can't know to be true or not because it's unfalsifiable.
No, it's not unfalsifiable. There is possibility that there are parallel universes.
So if we accept that there is a possibility that there are, you know, alternate universe or there's some sort of multiverse or whatever. Okay, now go ahead and demonstrate why I should believe that there is some essence of me that exists on these other planes. Go for it.
Okay, I would say that we can't just prove it, therefore you shouldn't believe it.
Wait, I didn't understand that. Say it one more time.
Oh, they want me to say something that I'm not truly arguing about. So they can just
all I've done is ask you to repeat yourself. All I've done is ask you to repeat yourself.
Well, I'm not saying you should believe anything. I'm saying you shouldn't believe anything.
Then so I shouldn't believe that souls exist.
You can believe in gravity, yeah, because that's proven. You can believe.
We're not talking about gravity. We're talking about souls. So I shouldn't believe that souls exist?
I don't think souls exist. I think they have disproven it. They possibly can, you know? So I think the most rational position is we don't know if they're souls. And so
why are we arguing for a position that you're conceding we don't know? This is a waste
because Mike, this caller is a troll and I'm gonna drop the call.
Yeah, this is a entire waste of time. We don't know. Okay, cool. Then we literally debunked everything that you came in here to talk about. Cool.
That was like, I feel dumber now.
My thing is like, if you're going to prop up some definition of something, and positive.
Nah,
like
he's just
something
he's
that
just,
exists in reality and it's unfalsifiable. Yeah, we can't know or not know.
that wasn't a serious guy. So sorry to the audience for wasting 10 minutes on that bullshit. But we do have more theists on the line. So we're going to keep rolling those dice. Maybe I'll get snake eyes again. Maybe not. We've got Apollos, Apoyos, maybe. I don't know.
Ohio.
Calling from Texas. Is it Apoyos?
Apollos.
Apollos. Sorry about that. Thinks there is, I saw Texas, so I don't know if it could be Apoyos. You could be like, you know, the chickens or something. I don't know.
He
thinks there is a different standard being used by atheists to dismiss Brandon of At arguments and Jesus's resurrection. Let's dive in, my man.
I actually have a lot of things I want to talk about concerning, it's mostly the different arguments I see popping up over on the other side. I'm not necessarily here to give like a full case for my side, but just more so to talk about the arguments that I see popping up, like individual arguments. And one of them happened to be the discontinuity between the argument from reason and Jesus' resurrection, which I will explain here in a bit. But in any case, so the guy at the front line asked me to like pick one of my quote-unquote favorite arguments. But he asked me that I don't mention anyone specific, but I will be focusing on let's not even say that. Let's just focus on the arguments. Let's start off with this. Yeah, sorry?
I said let's focus on the arguments.
Yeah. Okay. So let's start off with, I put the discontinuity between, can you remind me what I put down again? Sorry.
Okay. So yeah. And actually let me plant a flag here. So it says, you think there's a different standard being used by atheists to dismiss Brandon of At arguments and Jesus's resurrection. So I can tell you, I'll speak for myself, maybe Michael dive in, speak for himself as well. So my standard is this, I think there's a lot of evidence to indicate that here in reality, I am not a Brandon of At. And I don't have any evidence in support of the I'm a Brandon of At claim. So that's why I would dismiss a Brandon of At argument. By the exact same process, I would look at Jesus resurrecting and say, I don't think that I have any reason to believe that the claim Jesus resurrected is true. I have a lot of reasons to think that it's false. So it's the same thing. It's just, what do I have evidence for? What do I not have evidence for? That's it.
Yeah, there's implicit and empirical basis of
word.
What I'm experiencing, whether I can claim that this is what I'm actually experiencing, I don't really have a say. I'm dealt with what is in the confines. And if it's for a Brandon of At in the first place, we talk about Jesus, we're dealing within the confines of the reality we find ourselves in.
Right.
And there is no implicit or empirical basis for men dying and raising from the dead, nor is there a logical entailment that if someone died and raised from the dead, that they're the son of God and that Christianity is true. That doesn't logically follow.
Yeah. Even if I was a Brandon of At, I wouldn't have any reason to think I was because I'm operating in reality.
Yeah, that would. Sorry. Can I? Oh, okay.
It's all you, man. Go for it.
Yeah, that's fine. Like a lack of evidence would be a different argument. But it was hard to put this one down on paper when I was trying to describe it to whoever was at the front desk. But basically
just
what I was trying to say was.
Just dive in.
Huh?
Just go ahead and give the argument. Just dive in.
Yeah. So. This person brings up this idea of Doyle's fallacy, the idea that we have to, and please correct me if there's a more accurate way of defining this, but it's the idea that it's fallacious to say that we can assume that this is the truth, this remaining possibility, if we have eliminated all the rest of the things we can think of. Does that sound about accurate?
Yeah, let me just restate it really quickly. So it's called Doyle's fallacy because of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle being the guy who wrote the Sherlock Holmes stories. And the idea in the Sherlock Holmes stories is that he's the world's greatest detective and that through his like super deductive reasoning capabilities, that once he's eliminated all of the other possibilities for, you know, who committed the crime, that whatever is left remaining, no matter how improbable, must necessarily be the truth. And it works in the stories, but it doesn't work in real life because you can never know that you've eliminated all the other possibilities.
Yeah. I think it's an abductive fallacy to assume what's most likely, right? Without presuming other possibilities that would be in that case, which is what most theistic arguments are what's most likely or what best explains.
And it's a shame. It's a shame Matt's not here because I'm pretty sure Matt's the guy who came up with, like, actually termed it this.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that, but if not, then we're just going to give the credit to Matt anyway. So.
Okay. Well, for what it's worth, I did hear it from him, but
I did too. In any case, let's keep going.
Yeah. Wouldn't we be in this case? The atheist would be telling us to dismiss unaccounted, unseen possibilities. In the case of Jesus' resurrection, it would be like any quote unquote any naturalistic hypothesis. They don't necessarily.
How would you know what an unknown or unseen possibility even was?
Yeah,
you know, they're unknown and unseen.
Yeah, I just have an issue with that. The fact is that the only thing we know about Jesus resurrecting is in virtue of a claim. That's it. And so, like, do you want to apply the type of reasoning to any imaginary claim we can make? To me, it's that you just have to substantiate the claim. But not even that. The problem that I have is that even if we substantiate the fact that Jesus resurrected, now I know theists for some reason like cringe at this, but even if we establish the fact, if you can point out the logical contradiction in aliens raising Jesus from the dead, if you can point out that that's a logical contradiction, I'm on board. But if you can't, then it could logically follow that aliens could have done that. And then therefore it does not logically follow that God is the best explanation. Because if you can't identify the contradiction in ulterior explanations that underdetermine the claim of the Christian, then I can underdetermine it as much as I want.
Sorry. Go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
Okay, yeah. So there were two things over there. One of them was the idea that we were clarifying about Doyle's fallacy being like, we were clarifying Doyle's fallacy, and then we were also clarifying the cause of Jesus's resurrection. This would be a separate argument I actually do have regarding the specific cause, but...
I'm more in favor to grant you everything that you want, right? Like, I'm more in line to go minimal facts, Jesus resurrected. Let's start there because there's no logical entailment that it should be that the Christian worldview is true. That doesn't logically follow from my perspective.
Okay. Well, where was I?
Because we are a little bit short on time. And
okay.
I'm wondering is this, is it your position that the biblical accounts related to the resurrection of Jesus are true?
What do you mean by that? Like, by 100% accurate? I actually hold a non-orthodox position by saying no.
Are you convinced that Jesus resurrected from the dead?
Yes.
Okay. Just make the case. Why would anybody believe that? Or why should anybody believe that?
Well, I'm not prepared to give an argument for that. That whole, I mean, that's a long argument, but,
Well, I mean, you're convinced, right? So like, what, why are you convinced that that's the case is all I'm asking you.
You know, like you guys have heard of the minimal facts.
I granted every one of them.
Yeah.
I figure that it's more likely than not.
It's more likely that we can use an explanation of a supernatural reason rather than terrestrial life that we know exists, that we've seen go to other planets, that have built technology to go to other planets, right? That's, to me, to you, more likely? Because to me, I don't see how you, in virtue of an unestablished criterion for the supernatural, is more likely than any other thing we could posit as a natural explanation. Because it seems
that applies to any supernatural claim.
Exactly. It seems if we list these out in like an Excel spreadsheet, you got like natural potential reasons and supernatural, I could go ad infinitum on natural, and you couldn't give me a single data point of a supernatural event. To me, that's damning for the position. I don't know how anybody holds the position.
I would actually say that it would actually make something virtuous as supernatural.
The fact that it hasn't been established is virtuous?
Well, yeah, because then it is supernatural. It's not natural then.
So it's more virtuous to go with something that hasn't been established? Me and you have a very fringe view on what it means to be virtuous.
Not that it hasn't been established. Well, I mean, like, this would be ideally the case it is established. I mean, we come to, like, very unique situations all the time, very unique events all the time.
Okay, but let me...
Right, but unique events have never, ever, ever, ever been demonstrated to be supernatural. Every single time in the history of humanity that we've gained a deeper understanding of an event, it has never once been, oh, it was supernatural, ever.
I'm not sure if we're being, well, I wanted to focus more on these other arguments in any case, but I will say that I'm not so sure we can correctly evaluate that based on this vague category of...
But what do you have to offer other than the claim in the Bible that Jesus resurrected, right? Like, you don't have anything of substance at all, nothing. You have a claim in a book. A book, essentially, it's a book says a thing. That's it. That's your starting point is a book says a thing. There's no substantiated fact of anything supernatural in any other domain of any other religion or any other belief. We don't have that. We have none of that. So for you to appeal as a virtuous explanation of something we have not established is the most fringe view you could ever have of virtuous explanation.
Yeah, if you can't bring to the table some way of demonstrating that the supernatural is a thing in the first place, then I don't know why you would feel like okay about appealing to it. That would just feel so dishonest to me.
Like, I've written papers on the subject, but like I'm not, like I said, I'm not fully prepared to give like a whole, you know, demonstration on this talk just yet.
But if you believe it to be true and you base your life around it, and you're telling me
if
you can't provide something, then I'm so somebody who's never believed in Jesus or God. I don't know how that works. I'm baffled to know that any person could go, I'm super convinced of these things, and certain entailments about that means that I defend slavery in some cases. And I'm not saying this about you, but this is the case for a lot of Christians, or that I can condemn gay people or trans people or do any of these things. But then when actually pressed, they're like, well, I couldn't give you anything. Then why the fuck do you believe it? I'm not trying to be rude to you, but it blows my mind that almost every conversation I have with people, it backs up into this. I can't really give it to you. If I believe in anything at all, well, I can substantiate the reason for why I believe in it, or at least provide something.
To be quite honest, I'm just nervous. Like,
no, look, I'm not trying to take away from you.
That's why I was trying to like simplify it, to just be like, why do you believe the resurrection happened? And we could do this with any supernatural claim in the Bible, okay? We could do it with any claim, period, in the Bible, and just go, okay, why do we believe things are true, you know? And if you can't give a reason, then I don't know.
Just not under these circumstances, at least for this specific claim. I mean, I can later, but like...
Let me just ask you, and I appreciate, and for you saying like, look, I'm nervous, appreciate that. Yeah. My apologies if I went overboard, but... If you can't provide independent attestation for why you believe, then why do you believe?
Because I can do it during other times.
But so you have independent attestation you can provide to me then?
First
of all, I wanted to talk about other things though, but like we pushed me all the way to talking about proving that Jesus resurrected when I wanted to talk about a Doyle's fallacy.
All right. Yeah. I'll tell you what, in the interest of just being a freaking sweetheart, let's really quickly, we'll do the Doyle's fallacy thing and then we're going to wrap up the show. So lay it out, man.
Okay. So the argument from reason, and I agree that it's better to say that we can't be 100% certain we're not a brain in the vat, right? We can't dismiss that remote naturalistic explanation. Doyle's fallacy is basically making the argument that you can't make the argument that this specific explanation is probable because you're assuming that you've eliminated all the other events. Now, first off, those don't like show up like in terms of like good evidence. So in terms of like us coming to the best explanation of what our reality is, on one hand, we have our brain in the vat and we say, well, we probably aren't a brain in the vat, or we have no good reason to believe we're a brain in the vat. And although that's a possibility, we don't necessarily, we count that as unlikely. We don't necessarily factor it into our equation. Whereas with Jesus's resurrection, it's almost like saying we have to like disprove like unseen naturalistic hypotheses that haven't even been thought of. I mean, that's
you can't come to a conclusion. You can't say we know what's going on here with any degree of certainty when with the Sherlock Holmes thing, right? It works in the stories because it's written that way. But in real life, okay, if you're trying to make some sort of statement about the nature of reality, about the cause of an event, and you don't know what the possibilities even are, then how are you going to ever know if you've come to the right conclusion?
We don't have 100% certainty, but
it's I'm not talking about 100% certainty. Let's just go with knowledge. Okay. How can you have a justified true belief about any of this stuff?
Because they're the only ones that have ever risen up to, well, scrutiny or reality or possibility or the hypothesis table, if that makes any sense.
Well, I'm not sure it does, because I'm not aware of any claims in support of the resurrection of Jesus that hold up to any scrutiny. I mean, we're stuck with the book says a thing.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. But regarding this point of Doyle's fallacy, Doyle's fallacy, can we grant that this is a different standard being applied when it comes to the argument from reason and Doyle's fallacy?
I'm not sure I understand what you mean by the argument.
The brain in the vat.
The brain in the vat thing. Okay. Okay. If I'm assessing the evidence for a claim like I am a brain in a vat, okay, we're talking about the question of belief. We're talking about things like knowledge. All right. Again, I'm just going right back to the beginning of the call. I don't have any reason to think that the claim I'm a brain in a vat is true. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm not coming to the conclusion saying I am definitively not a brain in a vat.
Yeah.
I'm saying I don't have any reason to think that's the case. I have lots of reasons to think that I'm not a brain in a vat. So I'm not saying, you know, I am not guilty definitively, you know, with any degree of certainty. I don't even think that like certainty in the way that I think we're talking about is possible. So I'm not sure how Doyle's fallacy applies to the brain in a vat thing. If we're just talking about what's reasonable to believe.
Doyle's fallacy would quote unquote apply because you're not sure if there's another explanation that would demote another realm of reality.
Maybe there is. Do I have any reason to think that's the case? No. I'm over here. I'm withholding judgment here, man. I'm not making claims of certainty with respect to whether or not I'm a brain in a vat. I'm saying I'm limited to what my senses tell me. You know, I appear to exist here in reality. All I can do is engage with this reality that I find myself in. As far as I know, I don't have any reason to think that I'm a brain in a vat or in any other like state of like suspended animation somewhere. It appears to be the case that I'm here in reality, and that's it. That's where the claim ends.
Mm-hmm. Good.
So I'm not ruling out other possibilities that I could be unaware of.
Yeah. So thanks for that. Regarding Jesus' resurrection, if we haven't thought of any naturalistic explanation that can account for the data, and maybe we have, but let's just say, for example, that we haven't, wouldn't it be the case then by process of elimination, not elimination like in the 100% sense?
Yeah. How do we have a process of elimination where the supernatural is now warranted when we don't have, when we've never warranted it? Why is it now warranted now?
And let's just be really honest. Let's be honest about what we're talking about with respect to data here. We've got a book says a thing. That's our data.
Well, I would have to disagree about that, but
hold on. I got to stop you there. How are you going to disagree with that? Kenneth made a point. The book says a thing, right? I can hand you a biology book and the book says a thing, right? It can say allele frequencies change over time in a population. That's evolution. It can say that. It can say that thing. What's different about that thing being said is there's independent attestation.
Right.
When we go and look at a population and we say, oh, hey, allele frequencies change over time in a population. There's an independent reason outside of the claims of the book. That's the task that's before you, because if you just have the book, like anybody can write anything. You're now committed to like a murder writing in a diary that I didn't murder the person, therefore it's true. There's no evidence. Simple. There.
What is there outside of the Bible that confirms the resurrection?
Well, okay. So you've got Tacitus, Josephus, Pliny the Younger, and stuff like that. But in any case, regarding
what do they say about the resurrection? What is the most favorable thing that any of those sources, that none of which are contemporary with Jesus, what are those sources? What's the most favorable thing? You'll find sources that say his followers believed that he was the Messiah,
which was Pliny the Younger, and that's an address to an emperor. He doesn't say anything that, oh, hey, this is the thing that bothers me about.
You're not going to find anything about resurrection in that stuff.
Yeah, when you talk about Pliny the Younger, he's giving like a letter to an emperor, from my understanding, talking about how to deal with Christians at the time. It's not like, oh, hey, here's this. Yeah. I watched Jesus resurrect.
So let's just be honest about this. What do we have outside of a book says a thing for the resurrection?
Well, no. Like, I'm not objecting to the ultimate fact that it's contained within book form and you have a claim right there. I'm just contesting the colloquial use of the term that kind of carries a lot of baggage with it, you know? Like, it's almost as if to say that some dude decides to write it like in the middle of nowhere and like
it's not about that, what the circumstances are about, why it was written, right? It's just the fact that all you have is what is written about a claim. It's just a claim. It doesn't have anything independent of attestation, right? Fine. Which by the way, there's a worse issue. There's an even worse issue. And it has
there's an S at the end.
Well, there's a worse issue about interpretation, right? What you read about the Bible and you interpret, you can't start from the fact alone that we should take it literally or metaphorically or what this verse means, what that verse means. There's another issue of something you haven't independently justified, which is how do you know that the interpretation at which you take reading about God's utterances actually align with his intentions and desires? Now, everybody does this from their own assumed interpretive principle. So most atheists just grant this, but there's so many more problems than just, is there independent attestation for the claim? It's, is there independent attestation that your interpretive principle that you are even applying about the claim is even in line with God's divine utterances? Because
Mike, how are you going to do that to this poor man?
I'm just saying a speaker can mean anything. There's just a nest of problems that
whether we like grant it's bad enough. There's nothing you can do to prove the resurrection. There's nothing you can do. You've got a book says a thing, and that is it.
And then to go
even further. I mean, like we could spend all day breaking down the layers on layers on layers of why believing that the resurrection happened is problematic at best. But yeah, man, we're over time, but you know, I appreciate the call. I would strongly urge you to think honestly and critically about whether you've got good reasons to believe something like the resurrection happened. Hopefully you can see that there are not different evidentiary standards being used here. It's just all the same. We're just trying to follow the evidence where it goes. But with that, we're gonna move on. We are over time. We're not gonna take the rest of the callers. I do want to say there was one person, an atheist, on the line we didn't get to because we got this influx of theist callers. Brian in Connecticut, having trouble arguing you don't need church for morality was what Brian was going to talk about. Brian, frankly, I would just direct you to look at the archives of ACA content, because there are a ton of resources out there on various shows that we've done, various calls that have been taken, talking about, you know, the basis of morality, ways to you know, justify having you know, moral grounding without having to appeal to the church or religion. But if that's not enough for you, call back next week and hopefully we can get to you. But yeah, that is going to be it for us today. J Mike, what do you have going on, man?
Some sleep in my future, that's for sure.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm just going to relax. I'm going to hang out. I'm going to celebrate the 10,000 followers.
Yeah.
Going to figure out what's going on with my desk. And I apologize maybe if there was any additional noise. It might have come from me. I think I have a loose little screw in my keyboard thing. So I'm going to fix that as well. I'm going to do some handiwork around the house and claim its handiwork.
I think we've all got at least one screw loose. I mean, let's keep it real.
Yeah, I have a few.
As we're on our way out the door, I want to just reiterate, if you're watching this video and you want to become a member, if you want to support what the ACA does, click that join button below the video. Find us on Patreon, patreon.com/theatheistexperience. Get involved in the Facebook communities if you're so inclined. Come catch us in Discord in a few minutes. Can we go one more look at the crew? Because we love these guys. The crew makes it happen. Okay. Between our patrons, between our crew, all of you in the chat, all of you in the Facebook groups, everybody, this community is an incredible place. It's a privilege to be a part of it. So with all that in mind, we will see you guys next week. Take care.
What will it take for you to start opening your eyes, to stop questioning the bullshit? It's setting up your business. What goes on between my feet?
It's time to get sexy. So watch Secular Sexuality Live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Central. Visit tiny.cc/YTSS and call into the show at 512-991-9242 or connect to the show online at tiny.cc/callsex.